Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch signals Thursday 8 p.m., and it's time for So What's Your Story. We're the only program originating in Houston devoted to live storytelling, and we're right here on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 FM Houston. I'm Warren Holloman. Tonight I'll be your host. Each week we celebrate the power of story by bringing you astonishing tellers who take us on captivating journeys, and then they bring us safely home. In a moment, we're going to introduce you to tonight's guest storytellers, but first, we need to tell you that we're in the middle of KPFT's Winter Fun Drive, and we need your support. It's simple. Just call 713-526-5738. Even a small donation makes a big difference, and the best time to call, actually, is right now. It only takes 90.1 seconds, and you won't miss a single story. I think that's right, Hank.
Warren, you know, I'm really excited about tonight because you've got a couple of great, great guests, and they're also dear friends, and I'm going to let you introduce them in a few minutes, but I want everybody to realize that tonight is an excellent example of what you're paying for. You know, in 1948, when Lewis Hill conceived of a radio station that could survive exclusively on listener support, people laughed. But he knew a lot better. He believed that free expression is something Americans valued enough to support through their own donations. And Pacifica Radio was born as a Pacifica free speech affiliate. Houston's KPFT serves as an essential communication institution. KPFT is a Pacifica affiliate, and it does a really great job. And moreover, So What's Your Story is among the station's icon for community radio. We bring everyday people with astonishing stories that really transform us every week, and tonight is going to be a good example of that. This program, actually, just like Lewis Hill's concept of Pacifica, started out as a real challenge. I was told that no one would find live storytelling all that appealing, and that was in 2008. And they were wrong. People loved it, and they supported it. But that support has to be constant because we're always in a prove-it mode. Whether our live tellers are students, famous folklorists, vulnerable moms and dads, actors, writers, or passionate advocates for narratives, as in the recent Holocaust Remembrance Day program, our team, which has grown from 1 to 9, wants you to never forget that it's never too late to live happily ever after. And it's been that way since 2008. This is our winter fun drive, and like every fun drive, it comes around the corner at every turn. But regardless of its pace, we need your help. Your donations keep us alive and keep storytelling in your lives every Thursday at 8 p.m. Give us a call at 713-526-5738 and tell Greg what you wish to donate. And if you've got any comments about our program, we would love to hear them. We will thank you on the air unless you say otherwise. But, you know, calling the show supports because we hear the proverbial ring. With the new system out there, we're not going to hear a ring, but the volunteers will, and that's all that matters. But we will hear your voices, because all those voices are just a lot more than sound. They speak resoundingly about the power of story. If you're not a phone person, if Betty Bye kicks in a little early, or if you're old like us, especially me, go online to www.kpft.org to make your pledge. Click on donations and then select a form of payment. And then, and this is important, please scroll to So What's Your Story is the program that you wish to support. All support goes to the station, but the number of supporters and the amount is linked directly to the program that solicits it. Listener-sponsored KPFT Pacifica, Fuel for Peace. Warren, I appreciate the time. Have a great show.
Thank you, Hank. Thank you. Tonight we're telling stories about how families handle the loss of a loved one, and our show features two of Houston's most talented storytellers, Jackie Ford and Kent Keith, are Moth Story Slams champions, and as well as frequent guests on our show. When they tell their stories, you'll know why we keep inviting them back. Jackie, Kent, welcome to So What's Your Story.
Thanks, Warren. Good to be here.
Thanks for having us.
Jackie Ford is an attorney, an Ohio State fan, and a storyteller inspired by her journey from Air Force brat to working mom. Her stories are rooted in everyday life, complete with the triumphs and travails of an eclectic family. Jackie, Why are so many of your stories about your family?
Well, you know, my children keep asking me that, too. But I think it's a couple of things. I think one thing is just that I have an interesting and eclectic family, and I love them, and I love storytelling, so it makes sense to put the two together. And the other thing is, you know, I found during some of the tough times growing up and then into adulthood, if I stepped back and thought of what was happening as a story, it really was a very useful way of getting some perspective on something, kind of feeling like you were floating up at the top of the room looking down. And so it's kind of a therapy for me, so that's why I do it that way.
Your story gave you, so you were able to kind of get a perspective and kind of a detachment almost.
Right.
A control over the situation by telling a story about it.
And thinking about it as a narrative unfolding in front of you, I think.
Yeah. I love that. I think stories are happening all around us all the time, and you're one of those people who notices that. Well, your first story is one of those cases, I think. It's ostensibly about a cat stuck in a tree. But like most good narratives, it's about so much more. Tell us your story.
Okay. Thank you. My father was a very practical man. He was, by training, a civil engineer and had been a fire chief at one point in his life. And so he was a very practical, hands-on kind of guy. He liked things that could be measured and known and touched, things that were objective. So he was good at things that were mechanical, electrical, plumbing. All that stuff was my dad's job in the house. And anything that involved a wrench or a hammer or a ladder or a saw, that went in the dad box. So he was good at the stuff. And because my dad was so good at the stuff, I never bothered to learn how to do any of the stuff. Why would I? My dad would always be there to do it. And it certainly never occurred to me that there would ever come a time when he wouldn't be. Particularly because he was so good at it and he was the picture of health. He literally never took a single sick day in his entire working life, until he did. And that came in my junior year of high school. My dad got a very vicious and fast-moving form of cancer, and in about a two-month spread went from diagnosis to passing away. So he died that January, and a very cold and gray winter set in that year for me in Virginia. And after the funeral was over and the nice cards and the visits stopped, it was just my mom and I left in that little house trying to figure it out. How do we get through each day? How do we get to the other side of the grief? And how do we do this stuff? How do we do this stuff? And I got to say, I was not very good at it, but we tried. So I came home after school one day, end of winter, early spring. The light was starting to fade. It was cold. And I noticed one of the little boys from the neighborhood was out in the backyard. I thought, what's Brian doing there? So I go out in the backyard, and little Brian, he's probably about 8 years old, he says, oh, you've got a cat stuck up in the tree. And I look up this tall, tall tree, and sure enough, there's a little cat crying up there. And I said, what am I supposed to do? He looks at me like, I'm eight. How do I know? And he said, well, I think firemen get the cats out of the trees. Are you supposed to call the fire department? I thought, is that what I'm supposed to do? So I went in and said to my mother, who was fixing dinner in the kitchen, I said, hey, we've got a cat out on the tree. Do you think we should call the fire department? She turns on me with that wooden spoon in her hand and says, your father was a fire chief. Do you honestly think I'm going to bother the fire department for a cat? Like, oh, okay, I'll take that as a no. So I go outside and said, yeah, Brian, no, we're not calling the fire department. Maybe I could get the ladder and get up there, and maybe I could coax the cat to come to me. So I go to the shed, and I get the big ladder. My dad's out of the shed, and I put it against the tree, and I go to the top, and I'm just not tall enough, and she won't come to me. So that didn't work. So I go back downstairs, down the ladder, and I said, Brian, you know, I've never had a cat, but I think cats don't like water. Maybe we could try that. Oh, that's a great idea, he says. So I get the extra long hose out of the shed, and I hook it up to the spigot on the outside of the house. Take it over to the ladder. I said, okay, Brian, you stay here under the tree. I'm going to go up there and see if I can, you know, splash some water at her. She'll jump, and you can catch her. So I get up there, and I've got the nozzle, the gun-type nozzle at the end of this hose, and I get up there to the top. I get that cat in my sights. I pull the nozzle, and absolutely nothing happens. There's no water. So I go back down, I go over to the spigot, I play with it, and there's no water coming out of the spigot. And at that point, it is just about to get dark, And I said, you know, Brian, we've tried. I think maybe we're done here. I don't know what to do. And he said, oh, it's too bad your dad's not here. He'd know what to do. And that kind of put a little stiff in my spine. So I went inside and said to my mother, hey, how come there's no water coming out of that spigot out there? And she said, oh, well, I think your dad would turn that off in the winter so the pipes wouldn't freeze. Why? Is this about that cat? No, thanks, Mom. So I go running downstairs. So I go down to the basement. And I can see through the basement window, little Brian is still walking around out there. And between me and the window, there's a concrete wall, and it's got all these dials and little pipes on it. And I thought, this has to be it. The spigot's right on the other side of this wall. One of these has to be the right one to turn it back on, but which one? If I turn off the water to the kitchen, my mother's going to kill me. So how am I going to figure this out? And I started to feel kind of overwhelmed. And I thought, I don't know what to do here. I don't know how to get through the days. I don't know if we're even going to be able to afford to stay in this house. I don't know if there's going to be money for me for college. I don't know what happens now, and I sure don't know how to do any of the stuff. I don't know what to do. Dad, how could you leave me here like that? And then I noticed something on the wall, and I leaned closer to that wall, and I saw that there were markings. And underneath one of those valves in my dad's perfect block handwriting, when you need to turn the water on in the spring, turn this valve. So I turned it, and I heard the water come on. And I went outside. I could see it sputtering out of that spigot. I said, okay, Brian, let's do this. Put your hood on. There might be some water coming down on you. So he puts the hood up on his jacket, plants his feet. I go up to the top of that ladder. I get that cat in my sights. I pull that trigger. Kabam! All this built-up water pressure comes, knocks the poor cat clear out of the tree. Brian sees these claws coming down at him and jumps out of the way. So she kind of bounces off of him. But she lands, you know, no worse the wear. Kind of gives me a look, walks off. Brian says, that was great. He goes home to dinner. I put away the ladder and the hose, and I go into dinner. Now, I don't recall ever seeing that cat again. I assume she learned her lesson about not going up the tree. But I think I learned a lesson that day myself. I figured out that it was maybe there was a path to get to the other side of the sadness. There was a path for me to grow up a little bit, whether I wanted to or not. And that with a little bit of help, I could figure out this stuff.
I love the way you use this incident, this crazy incident, the cat in the tree, to talk about something that's really serious and painful, the loss of your father. I'm curious, when did you realize that this incident of the cat in the tree was really a story about grief?
I think I must have realized it right away, and the reason is, I told this story recently to my friend William, who I've known since we were teenagers. I met him about 6 months after this incident, and he said, I remember you telling me this when we were still in school. So I must have known even at the time, as I said, that practice I learned somewhere of pulling yourself back and thinking of what's happening in front of you as a story gives you some distance and a way to process it a little bit.
Well, I mean, it's definitely a nice action story without the other element, but then to make that an occasion to think about the grief just makes it a really powerful story. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
What's the single most important message you'd like our listeners to take from your story?
The thing about grief is, you know, it's like the song says, you can't go under it, you can't go around it, you just have to go through it. You have to go straight through it. And that there is that path. And sometimes the path comes in a completely unexpected way. It's not on your therapist's couch, you know. It's, you know, getting a cat out of a tree or literally reading the writing on the wall.
If you're just tuning in, this is So What's Your Story? And my guests are Jackie Ford and Kent Keith. We're in the middle of KPFT's Winter Fund Drive, and we need you to call 713-526-5738. It only takes 90.1 seconds, and if you call right now, you won't miss our next story. Kent, you've been waiting patiently in the wings, and now I'd like to give you a proper introduction. Kent Keith's two greatest influences were his dad, who taught him to love storytelling, and his Catholic mom, who helped him understand the power of human compassion. Kent's gestures of compassion are seen in Fruit Share Houston, an organization founded by Kent and his wife, Karen. It's about feeding our cities hungry that, in Kent's words, feeds his soul. Kent's name is a story of sorts. Workmates call him Mel. Childhood friends call him Glenn. His nephews, of course, Uncle Gil. His dad got his attention by calling him Skeets. And Kent, well, he calls himself Kent. So, Skeets, welcome back to the show.
Wow, haven't been called Skeets in a long time. But you're going to have to add something to that.
Yeah.
Because now I have a granddaughter. And my granddaughter calls me Paw Story.
Paw Story.
Paw Story. Not Grandpa Story. Paw Story.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, the organization that you and your wife founded, Fruit Share Houston, sounds very intriguing to me. I heard you describe it when you were on the show a few years ago. Could you tell our listeners about it?
Sure. It's Houston, actually, believe it or not, is a gigantic urban orchard. I mean, we have literally thousands of orange trees and grapefruit trees, mandarin trees, lemons. And we've seen that most of this fruit either isn't used or it's wasted. So we started going to these homeowners of these trees, harvesting the fruit off of these trees and taking it to several different homeless shelters and food pantries around the city. Mm-hmm. So last year we got about 30,000 pounds of fruit this way, and thousands of people that wouldn't have been able to have fresh fruit got access to it.
That's a great idea and a great, very practical idea as well.
It's a win-win.
Yeah. Your first story, like Jackie's story, is about a painful loss, but you've given it an uplifting title, Beauty. Tell us your story.
The beauty of a hurricane from the long distance of a satellite is staggering. The beauty of a tornado from the safety of a telephoto lens is ominous. The beauty of a afternoon thunderstorm under the protection of a covered patio is sublime. But you take away that beauty. I mean, you take away that distance, you take away that safety and that beauty. Well, that's a different story. In August of 1983, Hurricane Alicia slammed into the city of Houston. And at the same time that that storm was pummeling our city, our son Nathan was born. And I'm here to tell you that that big old storm had nothing on that little storm child. When he was two, I had to go up onto the roof of the house to fix some shingles. So I took our 24-foot extension ladder, hoisted it up on the side of the house. I climbed the ladder. I climbed up on the roof to the top of the roof. And then I looked back, and I saw Nathan, my two-year-old son, at the top of that ladder trying to get onto the roof. It scared the crap out of me. And I scooped him up. I held him close to me, and I could smell his sweaty hair and his head the whole way down that ladder. And I thought, the smell of boy is the sweetest smell on earth. When he was three, he asked me if I'd take the training wheels off of his bicycle. And I thought, there's no way. A kid needs to be four or five or even six before he starts riding a bike without training wheels. But that little three-year-old was insistent. So I took those training wheels off the bike. I held it steady for him. I gave him a little shove. It wobbled a little to the left, a little to the right, and then he shot off down the road straight as an arrow. And I remember thinking that the day will come when my little boy isn't my little boy anymore. When he was in middle school, he challenged me to a foot race around the block. And at the time, I was pretty fast. So I told him, I said, "Nathan, I'm going to take you up on your bet, and I'm going to make it 10 to 1. If you win, I'm going to pay you $10. But if I win, you owe me $1. So he took me up on the bet. We headed up the block. We went around the corner. We came back the other side of the block. And in the home stretch, it was clear I was going to lose this race in my 10 bucks. Sure enough, there he was at the finish line with this big, beautiful smile that said, "I beat you, Dad." In high school, he played varsity baseball, and he was so good. To watch Nathan swing a bat or to watch him field a grounder at third was to watch this beautiful union between power and grace. He was so good, he went on to be All-State, third base, Texas. I have a picture by my bedside. It's Nathan and me, arm in arm, him in his sweaty, dirty uniform with the smile that says, "I own the world," and me with my own smile that says, "And this is my son." He graduated from high school. He went on to college, and something sucked the life energy out of my son. It was dark. It was ominous, and it was ugly. And that something was prescription drug addiction. And with that addiction came a whole host of other pathologies, not the least of which were run-ins with the law. I remember December 19th, 2007, I took Nathan to see his probation officer. And after the meeting, we drove around in the car for several hours just talking, and the last thing I said to him that day was, "Nathan, this can kill you." 3 days later, December 22nd, 2007, Nathan died of an accidental drug overdose. Nathan, in Hebrew, means gift. And now, with 12 years of safety and distance, I can see what a complicated but beautiful gift we were given. And I reflect on how grateful I am for having had lived up close in that storm, that beautiful and oh too brief storm that we call Nathan.
Kent, what strikes me is that you put so much love into the crafting and telling of this story, and it reminds me of another story you told about a friend who died. Heard you tell that at the Moth and on this show as well. And these stories speak a lot to me, and I think to all of us. And thank you for sharing it. But I know it must hurt to do this.
Yeah. It does hurt, but it's not a hurt that I find I run away from. I find that this story was probably, I don't know, 6 minutes long. But the crafting of the story, the practicing of the story, the retelling to myself of the story, the whole time I have Nathan there with me. And it's a gift for me to have that.
So perhaps that's your answer, but why did you decide to tell this story?
Well, I certainly couldn't have told it the first couple of years after Nathan died, but as I've gotten distance on it, I've put into perspective the problems that Nathan had, and he had many. And I was able to see all the beauty that his life really was, and that it wasn't about this one thing. It was about his whole life, not just that one bad incident.
When you told the story, I was thinking about what Jackie said in her closing comment, is that you really have to go through the grief, and your story is facing that. What message would you like our listeners to take from this beautiful story?
Well, it's not too different from what Jackie just said. And simply, and this is kind of a mantra for me, is grief felt can lift.
Wow. Grief felt can lift.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. This is Warren Holloman. You're listening to my guest storytellers. That was Kent Keith, and before that, Jackie Ford, on So What's Your Story? Only on Pacifica KPFT 90.1 Houston and 91.9 in Huntsville. We're at the bottom of the hour, and it's time for this week's storytelling calendar. Justin?
Yes. So let's start with our sponsors, the Houston Storytellers Guild, because it is a great place to learn about the art of telling. They meet on the fourth Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at Temple Emmanuel, located at 1500 Sunset. Check out their next swap, which is on February 25th, and be sure to bring a friend. Be sure to visit the Guild's website at www.houstonstorytellers.org for information about all of their upcoming events. And while you're on the Guild's page, why not become a member? It's easy to do online. Also, listen to some of our past So What's Your Story programs. Every radio show since 2008, all listed under radio program. Don't own a radio? That's not a problem, because you can listen to us stream live on kpft.org and on Facebook. We're also on YouTube. We're all over the place. Don't forget our friends at the Moth at Warehouse Live the second Tuesday of the month, where you'll enjoy some terrific stories. Next one is February 11th, and the theme is Love Hurts. And for listeners who want to take their storytelling skills to the next level, why not become a member of the Tejas Storytelling Association and the National Storytelling Network? Both happen to be staunch supporters of a program.
And last but definitely not least,
Don't forget to register for the Wimberley Storytelling Festival. It will be here before you know it, February 22nd, and it will feature some of our favorite storytellers, including tonight's guest, Jackie, along with Hank, Chris, and Harwin. And be sure, and also I have a jingle to play for you guys.
Okay.
2020, the Storytelling Festival in beautiful Wimberley.
Everyone has a story to tell. It's a tradition as old as time. Wimberley's first storytelling fest invites you to come, listen, laugh, and learn. Look at us. We're bringing storytellers in from all over Texas. Houston, Austin, San Antone, and the Hill Country, too. Famous tellers, award-winning PBSers, indigenous elders, and local jawboners. We'll see you at 7A Ranch Opera House on 2/22/2020.
2/22/2020. The Storytelling Festival in beautiful Wimberley.
That's coming up in about 3 weeks. Justin, thank you for that banjo playing. You're good. You're really good. I really don't know what to say after that, so I think I'm just going to let Hank come in and update us on the fun drive.
Oh, the first thing you know, old Jed's a millionaire. The kinfolk said, Jed, move away from there. That's what I always think about that when I think about that Wimberley tune. I love it. I don't get out in the country much, so I'm looking forward to it. You know, I mean, my idea of roughing it is when room service is late. You know what I mean? So, I mean, this should be a lot of fun. Tonight's two tellers are really very special to me too, Warren, as are you. You know, the four of us have a lot in common as far as the kinds of stories we tell. There's a lot of vulnerability, and sometimes they're very difficult. And I know that that Kent was there a couple of months ago when I told a story about seeing the soul from my grandfather leave his body. And I remember so many stories that Jackie has told over the last few years about her daughter and about the kind of pride in her father. I mean, incredible stories, really. And your stories, of course, Warren, there's something about these kinds of stories that really beg to understand the common denominator that connects us all. And I think that when Ken said grief is a way of really, you know, digging deep, and these are my own words, sort of coming out the other side, you know, sort of a healing method. It's so true. It's so true. You know, for those of you who are listening in, and if you don't know us, Let me give you the short course. So What's Your Story puts the spotlight on soul-inspiring tellers who take us on astounding journeys with revealing personal narratives, and some take us on journeys with fanciful folktales and everything in between. And these storytellers tell stories for the reasons they eat and they sleep, because they have to. And that's no hyperbole. This program was the first venue in Houston to showcase storytellers, and it remains the largest context for tellers to tell their tales. We've got The Moth, and we have adult storytelling and alike, but this is really the place where most tellers have told their stories. Over 600 stories in the last 11 years. And that's pretty remarkable, and I'm certainly proud of it. It was, we've had professional tellers grace our studio, all very terrific, many believe the best around, but most of our guests are simply awesome people with extraordinary stories to tell. And having a story to tell, that's what we're all about on So What's Your Story? And most of you already know that, because when I started the show many years ago as an open journal, you called it and said, you know what, that isn't enough. We want it every week. And so we've got it every week. We started from pretty bizarre hours, but right now we're the heart of prime time. We need you to give us a call at 713-526-5738, because without your donations, we can't stay on the air. None of us are paid, but you don't call in or listen in, I should say, and say, what a terrible program. They're awful. But what do you expect from volunteers? You don't get that. You expect excellence, and that's what you get from a team that rivals any NPR squad on the airwaves. Go up and down the dial, and you won't hear better programming anywhere. In fact, this Thursday schedule, with the iconic Wally James and the Progressive Forum, the unique mix by Lars and the Tennyson Tape Deck, and us hovering in the center, gives you the best damn 7 to 10 p.m. in the land. And don't tune in and dare hear... That's right, silence, because that's what you're going to hear without your donations, and we don't want that. Don't you dare shut out what the Klan tried to do in 1970 by bombing the station to keep us quiet. I can't think of a better time to back freedom of expression while endorsing our community's collection of human stories. They should all be heard. They must be heard. And we need to hear you call in with your pledge to 713-526-5738, Jam KPFT. Warren?
Hank, it occurs to me that both of our storytelling guests tonight have been each been on the show. I think this is at least the third time for each of them.
Correct?
Yes.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
So they probably know us pretty well, for better or for worse. And I would wonder, Kent and Jackie, either of you can go first. In your own words, tell our community why they should support the show.
Well, for me, I've heard it said that the best argument in the world won't change a person's mind. That's going to take a good story. And I don't know. I know there's, I don't even know how many Pacifica stations there are in the United States, but I don't think any of them have a story dedicated to storytelling. So What's Your Story is a treasure for this city. And I want my granddaughter Ainsley to be able to hear this. So I'm going to give my money, and I'm going to put my money where my mouth is. And here's my $500.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. We did not. We really appreciate it. Some of our tellers are our most generous supporters, and that's certainly the case. We really thank you.
Well, you deserve it. Thank you, guys.
Wow.
Thank you, Kent.
Thank you very much. That'll keep us on the air for a little longer.
Yeah, well,
sure.
You know, both Jackie and Ken have been really staunch supporters, and we have so many wonderful, wonderful ones, and thank you.
Well, and I think the other thing I would say about that is, you know, I hope everybody that is listening right now recognizes that you're listening because you think this is a program worth listening to. And if you think it's worth listening to, then don't just be a free rider. Make your contribution, as Kent and I have done. I made mine earlier today. I'm handing over the check, but yeah. I did make it online. Y'all can do that. Don't forget, you can go to KPFT website and do that.
Yes, thank you.
But again, as Hank was saying, what you're listening to for free is not actually free. There's a light bill to pay. There are facilities to pay for and equipment to buy, and they all cost money. And the only source of those funds is those of you who are listening. So we really need you to to follow suit. And keep in mind, you know, you're not just supporting the program for yourself. You're supporting it for the whole community. So be a good neighbor and contribute to KPFT.
Yeah, you guys are great. You guys are great. Sometimes the microphone doesn't work as well. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Get the lights on. Justin, what's going on? No more water. What do you mean? Oh, the heat's off. Great.
So as much as we appreciate your financial support, Jackie and Kent, I think even more we appreciate your well-crafted stories. And Jackie, I think we're ready for your second story. What's the title?
It's called What I Found in the Stones.
What I Found in the Stones. Okay,
yes.
Great.
Yes. So on a beautiful spring Saturday morning a couple of years ago, I made a trip to Arlington National Cemetery. Mm-hmm. Now, for those of you who maybe aren't fully familiar with it, Arlington is a very large and very beautiful cemetery right outside Washington, D.C. It was actually created in 1861, and it now is over 600 acres of just beautiful green fields. It's just a moving, beautiful setting. And it's the resting place of tens of thousands of veterans and other family members who have served this country, and some of whom have made the ultimate sacrifice for this country. I grew up in a military family. I grew up not mostly in that area of Virginia, so I've been to Arlington several times, including for several funerals. But the reason I was going there on that particular day was it was my first opportunity to see my mother's headstone. My mother and my father are both buried at Arlington, and my father's parents, my grandparents, are both buried at Arlington as well. So I have a total of four family members there. And, you know, Arlington, like so many places that are related to the military, is all about rules and regulations. Everything is the same. Everything is regimented. No exceptions. So every headstone is the same. It's the same size. It's the same style. It's the same format. It's the same stone. And there are rules about accessing the facility that are the same for everyone. And you're not allowed to bring a private car onto the grounds, if you think about it, you know, for obvious reasons. But if you make arrangements ahead of time, you can get a special pass if you can demonstrate that you're a family member of someone who is buried there. So I made all the arrangements in advance, and I called a taxi at my hotel that morning. This is pre-Uber, so it was a taxi. And I explained to the driver what I was going to want him to do. Drive with me into Arlington and then stay in the car while I visited first one and the other gravesite. Of course, he was very kind about it. He sat straight up in his chair. Oh, ma'am, I would be very happy to help you with that today. So we were off to a very good start. So you have to understand another Arlington rule, and that is the way that spouses are buried along with members of the military. When I say that my parents are buried together at Arlington, they are literally together. There is a single grave, and there is one headstone. My father's information is on the front, and my mother's is on the back. And my grandparents are the same way. That's how they do it at Arlington. So my father died back in 1978. I had visited this site several times before, but again, not since my mother's headstone had been done. So the driver turned off the car, and I went down a little bit of a hill down to this beautiful spot where my parents are buried. And, you know, I looked at my dad's side of the stone and, you know, sort of contemplative there for a minute. I was very thankful that I had brought one of my mother's old handkerchiefs with me because I needed it. And I sat there and kind of talked to him for a minute. And then I went around the back to the headstone. Now, my mother's name was Mary Elizabeth Ford. My father's name was Jeffrey Ford. My mother's maiden name was Cork, with a Q. Her name on the headstone was not Mary or Mary Elizabeth. Name on the headstone said Mary Q, like Ellie Mae or Mary Ann. That is not my mother's name. It is not Mary Q. All these rules and regulations, and somehow the Army has managed to get my mother's name. My mother dedicated her life to the Air Force just as much as my father did. She uprooted us every few years, had to move all the time, and you couldn't get her headstone right. I mean, I was really kind of spinning out of control in the middle of this lovely, quiet setting. So I was livid. I march back up to the car. Of course, the driver is expecting me to come, you know, weeping and sad, and I'm spitting fire. I get in the car. I tell him what's happened. He says, "That's just awful. Who could do that?" And I said, "I know. Who could be stupid enough to..." And just then it occurred to me that, you know, I was the one who had filled out the paperwork at the internment office. Is it possible... My mother used to sign her name Mary Q. Ford. Had I somehow put that in the wrong place on the form? Had I actually caused a typo on my mother's headstone? What was I going to tell my brothers and sisters? This was not starting out well. Okay. I showed him on the map where my grandparents were buried, which is way on the other side of the cemetery. I thought, by the time I get over there, I'll be back in the right, peaceful frame of mind. So we get over to where my grandparents are, and they are actually quite a ways down this hill from the road, and there's lots of gnarled, you know, tree roots and stuff, and it's kind of a climb to get down there. But I was trying to think, you know, I remember coming here to visit my grandfather's grave when my grandmother was still alive. Have I been here since my grandmother died? I don't remember. So I went around to the front, and of course my grandfather's stone says Ralph Randall Ford, just like it's supposed to, of course. I go around the back side to see my grandmother's information. My grandmother had an unusual first name. It was Athol, A-T-H-O-L-L. Mm-hmm. Athol May Nina Hodgson was her maiden name, and then she married Ralph Randall Ford. So the name on her headstone should have been Athol, Athol May, Athol May Nina. No, it was Athol Randall. They took my grandfather's middle name and gave it to my grandmother. Her headstone was wrong. Both of them were wrong. And I thought, she died in like 1980. I mean, have none of us ever come to see? What kind of family are we? This is just terrible. So I'm feeling guilty and angry and terrible. And then I noticed one other thing about their headstone. Someone had placed several little stones along the top of the headstone. They didn't get there by accident. They had clearly been placed there deliberately. And there were several stones at the base. Now, you know, in the Jewish tradition, it's customary to leave stones rather than flowers as a sign of respect at the grave. My grandparents were not Jewish. And I looked around thinking, well, some nice person just came by and did this for all the graves. Nope. Theirs was the only one. And I looked at that, and truth be told, my grandfather was something of an anti-Semite. So the idea that my grandfather's grave had these lovely, thoughtful stones on it, probably from a nice Jewish person who happened to come by, that's the thing that made me sink to the ground and begin to laugh. And I laughed actually quite a while. And I'm sure the driver thought, oh, she must be overwhelmed with grief down there. But I sat there thinking about that. And at the point when I could finally stop laughing, I took a look around at all those graves around me. And I thought, you know, even in this place of sorrow and loss and grief and regret, so many of these are young deaths here. Even in this place, God winks at us.
Oh.
And I got that wink that day, and I walked back to the taxi with a smile and the unique kind of hope that comes from that mixture of sorrow and laughter.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
Kent, I heard you winking and chuckling. Any thoughts about Jackie's story?
Well, I like the stones around the grandparents' headstone, and we really don't know why they were there.
Yeah. No.
And we never will.
And
we're just accepting that they were there. That's just beautiful to me.
Thank you.
If you tuned in late, this is So What's Your Story, and I'm here with guests Kent Keith and Jackie Ford. One last reminder, we're in the middle of Winter Fun Drive, and you've got just a few minutes left to call, 713-526-5738. Kent, you've got a story about your grandpa, and it's got the title, I believe, Love Stinks.
That's the title.
Tell us your story.
Isn't it amazing that the slightest smell or the faintest aroma can take us back in time to almost anywhere in our lives? And we all have these, I'll call them olfactory time travelers. Some of mine are, whenever I smell the essence of lilac, I'm immediately back at my childhood home in the backyard, running around the lilac bush that I just love to smell. Anytime I smell cigar smoke, I'm playing poker with my dad, my cigar-smoking uncles. We're drinking beer. We're laughing. And anytime I get just the faintest whiff of lemon ginger tea, I'm sitting in that restaurant on my first date with that beautiful woman who would become my wife. But there's a smell memory that I have that's more special than any of them. My grandma and grandpa Buzzemeyer had 62 grandkids. The first 11 were all granddaughters. The 12th was a boy, and that was me. And I was, beyond a shadow of a doubt, my grandpa Buzzemeyer's favorite grandkid. And you could ask all the other of those 62, and they tell you the same thing. Oh yeah, Kent, he's the special one. He was the favorite. In my the relationship I had with my grandpa, what was special? I remember taking long walks with him. He'd play any childhood game I ever wanted to, and he'd play catch with me on the front lawn for hours. And then when I was 6, my family moved from Cincinnati, Ohio, where this giant passel of family was, all these cousins, all these aunts and uncles, my grandma and grandpa. And we moved to Minneapolis, Minnesota. And I was so sad. I missed my grandpa. So 2 years later, when I was 8, and I got word that Grandpa Buzzemeyer was coming to Minnesota for a visit, I was so excited because I knew he was coming here not to visit any of my other 7 brothers or sisters or my mom or my dad. He was coming to visit me. And I was determined to spend as many of my waking hours as I could with this man that I loved so much. And it was just like before. We took long walks, we played games, and we spent hours on the front lawn playing catch. And then Monday came, and Grandpa had to go home. But before he went home, he went into the bathroom, and I stood outside that bathroom door while he was in there, and I heard him fart. And then I heard him take a big dump. And then I heard the toilet flush. He opened the door, and my eyes could have burned off from the smell. He saw me. He laughed. He gave me a hug. He said goodbye. He told me he loved me, and off he went. And while he was going out the front door, I went into the kitchen and I got myself a glass jar with a good screw-on cap. I went back into the bathroom where all that smell was, all that odor, all that essence of Grandpa Buzzemeyer. And with the glass in my right hand, with my left hand, I tried to shove as much of the air from the bathroom as I could. All that stink, all that Grandpa essence, I tried to squeeze into that jar and screw it on, because in my 8-year-old mind, I knew that the day would come when I could unscrew that top and I could be transported back to the front lawn playing catch with that man that I loved so much.
Oh, I did not see where that story was going. What an 8-year-old mind to think of that. Jackie, any thoughts about Kent's story?
You know, I think you captured the perspective of an 8-year-old boy just brilliantly. I mean, it happens to also be true, but, you know, it sticks with you for a reason. And it's because it's kind of the essence of the 8-year-old boy that you've caught there and gave this gave us that. I love that.
Thank you.
And our audience couldn't see this as Jackie and Hank and Justin and I could, but as you told the story, you really seemed to be going back there.
Oh, I was there.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can still smell it.
Yeah. Were you going there visually or through your olfactory system?
Well, maybe a little bit of both.
Oh, wow. We've heard some great stories tonight. Some stories that deal with some painful issues, but I feel like I don't know. I feel like I should pay you sort of a fee for the therapy you've done for me. It's just been
right.
been so helpful. I think I've been through some grief lately, and your stories have, and I think our listeners are probably identifying as well. So thank you for being, as Hank said, being so vulnerable. Hank, your thoughts?
Well, you know, this never happens, but I'm lost for words. Yeah, those were incredible stories. And one of the things that came to my mind is that, well, you know, Kent taps into sensory awareness probably better than anyone I know. Wow. You know, no one ever saw that one coming. These were great stories. They were very much signature Jackie and Kent stories, frankly. They were very much signature stories. Vulnerable, multidimensional, a lot of sensory things going on, extremely engaging. And you really were spot on, Warren, when you said that, Kent kind of took us there, or he was taking himself there. Both these tellers, as good tellers do, let these stories unfold in their minds. They go there for the first time, regardless of how many times they tell the story. They're there for the first time. It's always fresh. It's great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And we're going around the circle. We should let the young person in the room speak as well. Your thoughts, Justin?
I just spoke, Warren. I just spoke.
Oh.
I just did. Let Justin speak, however.
I thought they were both, all stories were great and very descriptive. Amazing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I liked all of them, yeah.
Yeah. Great. Well, Hank, how's any updates on the fund drive?
Right now, there is no update. No, nobody's calling in. It's been a slow night, and I wish it wasn't. But Jackie, for example, she got online to donate, and we do have, I hate to say this, but I will, we have an older crowd. So sometimes they do like to get online, so I'm very optimistic. Our drive is going on for another couple of weeks, so we really would love it if people would give us a call. We still have a few minutes left in the show, 713-526-5738. Please, if you do go online, please make sure that you are identifying So What's Your Story, and it's a story that you wish to support. We really do ask that you do that. Every show is terrific, but again, the amount of times that people talk about a show, identify a particular show that they want to support, that's the show that is seen as always staying on the inventory. It's kind of tricky, but we really want you to please identify our program. We'll be with you next week with another great show. I'm going to be hosting next week, and some of our favorite guests, Warren, you know them well. It's the middle school students from Meyerlin performing in visual arts, and they are just spectacular. They are just wonderful. And you're going to be hosting them again in March?
Right. That's right. They'll be... we thought who better to share the stories or the journals and diaries of teenage Holocaust victims and survivors than teenagers. And so Hank is helping connect me with teenagers from Meyerland Middle School, and they're going to read these stories. They're going to get very familiar with them, either read them or tell them.
Yeah, they're also going, I think they have some impression stories, as they call them,
right,
or reaction stories to that as well. And I am talking with them tomorrow, and hopefully they're going to be able to do some diaries as well. I think they're going to do anything we ask them to do. They're a great group, just a great group.
It always shocks me how the stories from the young ones are so powerful. Mm-hmm. But now that we've got some more seasoned tellers here, and we've got a couple of minutes, I think, I thought we should take advantage of their expertise. Could you just share with our listeners something about your methodology? How is it you go about crafting a story? Do you just put it all together in your head? Do you write it down? Do you just start telling it to whoever will listen and it comes together? How does it work?
It's all yours, Jackie.
Well, it's probably never the same way twice, but generally what I do is I come up with whatever I think the subject of the story is going to be, and I'll jot down some notes, and I'll come up, I usually try to think of it in three parts, a beginning, a middle, and an end. And sometimes the end comes to me first, you know, it doesn't necessarily go in order. And then I just start saying it out loud. And the first time it's about 20 minutes. I mean, it's just always way too long.
Me too.
It's like with writing, they tell you, you know, I had to make it long because I didn't have time to make it short. Mm-hmm. It's more challenging. It is a bit of a puzzle to take an event from your life and take the components of it and fit them into a story and then make that story fit, you know, 6 or 7 minutes. So you take out detail, you take out detail. So with the story tonight about my dad and the writing on the wall, there was a chunk of it that I had to take out because I didn't want to clog up the story. But in addition to the writing on the wall, he had kept a yellow legal pad in the weeks that he was dying. And I thought he was writing down, you know, maybe reminiscences about his life or maybe even a diary of his illness. And after he passed away, I opened it up and I just randomly opened it to a middle page, and it was instructions for how to clear the hose on the vacuum cleaner if it got clogged. So that's where really his mind and his focus was. So, but I, you know, you just take out what you have to and you get back to what the essence of the story is. And that's what you end up with.
Great advice. We've got 1 minute, Kent.
Oh, so quick. I mean,
or actually 30 seconds.
I'm much the same as Jackie, but I'm surprised, shocked, in awe over the number of times that a story will just come to me. Mm-hmm. And then I can put it together, but it's like, oh, I don't have a story on that. And after a few nights sleep or cogitating on it, it's like, boom, there it is.
Mm-hmm. Ah. Great advice. I wish we could go for another hour, but we will have you back. Tonight, our guests have taken us on journeys to some rather intimate places in their families and in their souls, and as promised, they've returned us safely home. Jackie, Kent, thank you for being with us on So What's Your Story?
Thank you for having us.
That's it for tonight, but don't you dare move, because Lars is up next with a sweet mix of singer-songwriters on the Tennyson tapes. Make 90.1 a part of every day, and while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling, join us every Thursday at 8 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And treasure what you hear. You keep loving great stories, and we'll keep bringing them to you. This is Warren Holloman, and along with Jackie and Kent and the rest of the So What's Your Story team, we never want you to forget that it's never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.